This podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
Well, just to follow on from this morning, really, I think it's worth, as we've all, or most of us, not all of us here, but most of us here have had the experience of a week's retreat, which is, however long you do it, it's always challenging. I mean, it changes year by year. I mean, it gets easy in some ways. Physically, it can get a bit easier, but, you know, we're all subject to our to our very unpredictable emotions, and whilst they may not bother us, as it were, one year, they may well come up next year and sort of catch us on the hop, as it were, and we can find ourselves getting lost in various pictures and experiences that we've had that you know, we have to sort of sit with and look at and see our relationship with and how we sort of deal with things, so we can turn things over and what have you. And very often they can be quite challenging, quite difficult, especially if we see bits of ourselves that clearly we would like to do something about. And you know, usually over a week, I think these one or two things will pop up, plus the physical experience that we have to sit through. So I think year on year, well, they're different, and I've always tried to encourage you to go with an empty mind, not going preempting how it's going to be, because it was like this last year, therefore it's going to be like this year. It simply doesn't work, and the more that you realise that, the more you will realise the nature of your mind is that it's very unpredictable, your emotions, that it doesn't run in straight lines, that you never know which way it's going to turn. But secondly, if you do project in that way, you're just creating dukkha for yourself, because it won't be the way that you think that it's going to be, and you will often produce a lot of dukkha for yourself, a lot of disappointment, whatever, I don't know, but whatever you do, it's not going to be the way that you imagine. That you, it makes you feel safe and secure that it's going to be like this, and it gives you a sense of security, a sense of being in control. That's why we do it, so you feel more comfortable. We don't want to go into the unknown completely open, just not knowing, and be prepared to not put anything in that space, which is what we do. We put things in the space, so it gives us an identity, and as I say, it gives us a sense of being in control in some way, and that's what we do. And when we do that, that's where dukkha comes from, because, as I say, the experience is almost guaranteed. It's not going to be the same. It's not going to be as you imagine it to be. But that's what we do, and that's it. So each year is different, and sometimes, of course, it can also be very joyful and very blissful, and we can have very wonderful experiences. These things can come to us more readily on retreats, on longer retreats. After a few days, things settle down, and you can have these experiences, maybe even little breakthroughs, get to understand yourself a little bit better, and that can be very, very liberating, actually, as I'm sure most of you experience things. Things get a bit clearer, and you feel like you've made progress, and you feel good about yourself, you feel good about the practice, and it's hopefully, you know, you should get these experiences from time to time. It's not all doom and gloom, I hope, because if it is, chances are you won't stick at it very long. You have to have some pleasant experiences and enjoy them. Don't feel guilty about enjoying yourself. Although we're all, from our Christian background, most of us, we probably feel that we shouldn't enjoy ourselves very much. But we'll put that condition into one side and enjoy it. And what can happen very often with that is that we can develop rather a lot of attachment to these experiences and find them very difficult to let go. We want to indulge in them, enjoy them, indulge in them, and relive them, play them over, try to figure out how you get back to the experience, which is understandable because it's enjoyable. But also, hopefully, you learn that that's just another form of attachment. And we're more happy to attach ourselves to pleasant experiences, and somehow we can justify that. But the difficult ones, the bits that we don't like, we don't want to attach ourselves to, but in fact we do. We do very often. We indulge in them and reinforce them, and reinforce our negativity towards ourselves. That too is attachment. We can get the whole spectrum over a week, and coming off the retreat, coming back into our daily lives, can often be quite difficult. Sometimes it's quite seamless, but I think most of us do. I think it's mainly because of the energy containment that it's looking for a way of manifesting itself, and we can feel a bit disorientated in some way for a few days until it settles down again, and that's perfectly natural, and we learn to go with it until we settle down again, and then maybe we can review the retreat and just see how we've got on with it. But it's always, well, you know, you don't need me to tell you that it's invariably a very challenging experience. But we willingly put ourselves in a place, in a position, in a place, in a situation, an environment, in a form where we remove distractions as much as possible. And sit with ourselves, open up to ourselves, see ourselves in the round for who we are, in an experience that we can't replicate, not even on a day retreat, and certainly not in our daily lives. And so it's a very, very rare, very valuable experience, and one to be grateful for. Because we should never take anything for granted in this, well, in life anyway, but certainly in this training, and be grateful that we've had the opportunity to be able to reflect upon ourselves and open up to ourselves and stay with ourselves. And what is ultimately what we do is we make friends with ourselves, we make friends with what we experience, we learn how to be skillful with our experience rather than be reactive and express attachment. And when you want to reject and push things away, that too is attachment. Don't think attachment is always grabbing. Any reactivity at all is a form of attachment, of grasping. So, and if you see that in the round, you see that actually we're in the mode of grasping virtually all of the time, and that's why we suffer. When we don't grasp, that's the end of suffering. It's quite a simple equation, actually. It's not complicated. But we have to we have to grow into it and see it and see the subtlety of our relationship with ourselves and with life, others with life, and see the subtlety of it all, that it's not a simple sort of black and white experience, but it's something that works on infinite levels, as it were, infinite degrees of subtlety. And hopefully a retreat will give you that opportunity to be able to see how that's our normal mode. Our normal mode is to be holding on. There's something inside of us that somehow always needs a piece of the action, always needs to own what the experience may be. And once that part of us rises up and takes hold of things, that's where dukkha raises its head. That's not the whole of us. We can very easily imagine that this personality, this ego, this self, whatever you want to call it, and whatever you think, well, this is the whole, this is who you are. But actually, there's another part of you that who you really are is actually with you all the time, that is actually doing the living, that is doing the experiencing. But it doesn't attach. So when you don't attach to things, when you truly just open and you go and you experience, whether it's pleasant or it doesn't matter what the event may be, and it comes and you experience it, you live it, you do it, and then you let it go and it passes off, and you don't hold on to it in any way, you don't chase it, you don't grab it. If you can do that with things, and that's who you really are, that's your true self. Your true self, not the ego self. That's who you really are. That's a feature of of your true nature. When you don't grasp, that's how close we are. But as we all know, and hopefully you realise more and more, there are very few things that come into our experience that we can just let it come to be, live it, and let it go into change without somehow trying to own the experience and possess it and take hold of it and turn it into something else, turn it into my possession. But to start to overlay things on top of the bare experience, then that becomes the self. That's the thing of attachment. In different degrees, sometimes real grasping, whether it's real grasping in the sense of greed and you want something, or you become very reactive, you become very angry, or you want to run away, or the fear, whatever, which you wouldn't say is grasping, but actually it is. You're grasping at the situation, and this is the realm of the self, the grasping self. And we can very easily imagine, well, that's the whole of who we are. But actually, it's not true. That part is always running with you through all of these situations. It's not the grasping self, the one that actually experiences the thing in the first place. And it's to be able to learn to identify that part of you. It's who you are. It's here. It's under your nose. Don't imagine it's like something that's buried somewhere that you've got to spend the next 5 or 10 years looking for it. Some esoteric path and all of that. We're living for that part of us that is living and experiencing life is not the ego. Is not the creator of dukkha. That's how close we are. So don't think this is some sort of great mystery tour, as it were, looking for something. That part of you that's free is with you all of the time. It is that which experiences. It is that which is who you are, truly are. But when you take hold of an experience, however it may be, through greed, aversion, non-understanding, fear. All of these, when these things rise up within an experience and you get caught by these things, that then becomes this thing that we call self, the phenomenon called self. And that bit there, we need to wake up to and see that this is the cause of dukkha, suffering, unsatisfactoriness, and it's never far from any experience. But we can experience life without this grasping self. And as I've suggested to you, that when you come up to the retreat, if you don't already decide how it's going to be, you arrive with all sorts of baggage. As an example, this applies to everything in your life, but just looking at the retreat, you come to the retreat with all sorts of baggage, carrying your experiences from last year, usually the negative ones, but even if you've had blissful states, you bring those also, and secretly you're just wishing to have more blissful states, and why not? But nevertheless, you carry all of this stuff with you. this is all got the seeds of the self there. And then when you bring this baggage, because that's what it is, you bring this baggage to the experience, and it doesn't work out, then there's a reaction to all of that, and this is where the self, well, you say it comes into being. Us Buddhists, we don't believe in the self. We say the self is a delusion, which it is. But for us, very often, the self is the most real thing in life. There is nothing more real than me. So it's quite a difficult one to get over. But at least, in theory, at least with some faith, you can maybe embrace that possibility. But you can actually test it out for yourself. If you see the self as the grasping part of you, the bit that wants the piece of the action, that wants to be reactive to whatever it is that you're experiencing, you can identify that, well, there's the self, and see that when you react, you can see the turmoil that's caused by that, and the dukkha that comes from that, however it may manifest. But if you can learn to just go with situation and not be reactive, but open and live it without any way of manipulating, then you're beginning to see another part of you that's not that grasping self. That's how close we are. It's not off on the other side of the planet. We're so close. And to be able to see the difference, begin to identify the difference between what is actually the fictitious self and the real self as it happens. Begin to see the difference and see that little monkey there that will always be coming to mess with the experience is what we need to wake up to. And take refuge in that part of us that actually is not part of the monkey, but is actually that which is who you really are, that's living the experience with an openness and a willingness to say yes, because you're not in a defensive mode, you're not looking to manipulate, try to do something with that experience, but rather just open and live it, whatever it may be. And it can be an unpleasant one. It can be something that really challenges you. But to go with it, rather than shut the door, draw the veil, but to go with it and to stay with it openly, without being reactive, without carrying it and making it into something. If you can do that, then you're experiencing who you really are. And that place there, that part of you there, is where freedom is to be found. That's where freedom is. That's where your liberation is. And you'll find that part there. You can ponder that part. It's actually very still because it doesn't get involved. It doesn't grab and hold. Its nature is one of stillness. It doesn't stir. It doesn't stir like you stir a, put your finger in a pool and create waves so that everything becomes confused and muddied. You can discover that the nature of that part there, which who you really are, that is not holding, is not grasping, is still. Things come, you experience them, and you let them go without disturbing its nature. It's when this other part of you comes, where the self-identity is lurking, that the thing becomes an agitation. Not so close we are. And, you know, on a retreat, on a big retreat, you can very much begin to identify, see where your liberation is and where your samsara is. Your liberation and your samsara. And begin to see the characteristics of who you are, which is that which just lives now and is open to whatever is here now. And that other part, the monkey that comes along, that wants to possess and wants to manipulate in whatever way. And if we can bring that more to our life, this is the polishing. And it's not something that's in your face. It's something that you have to, we call it a training. We train ourselves to be able to be in that mode where we accept the moment, really, and we respond to the moment as skillfully as we can with our experience and our knowledge and our education and all the rest of it, whatever the moment demands of us. And then we let it go when it changes, when the situation changes, and we don't dwell and we don't stay and we don't, as I like to say, turn a molehill into a mountain, which is what we do. And to learn to begin to find that part of it, it's who you are. You don't have to go digging holes all over the place. It's just wake up to who you, just see who you are. There's a part of you that doesn't get involved with things. And the very basis, the very heart of our type of training is our aspiration to bring stillness to our life. Well, that is still, that stillness in action. We have stillness on the cushion when we really do nothing physically, mentally, where we just let go and we discover that stillness. But then to take that stillness into your daily life, which is what we have to do, because this is a training of all four postures, and most of our life is actually spent off of the cushion. But we don't leave the stillness on the cushion. This is your stillness, and that stillness is who you are. This is not a void. This is not a nothingness. It is actually something, well, quite mysterious, that's very difficult to fathom, actually. The more you open up and discover it, it is not a place of negativity. And that's the manifestation of stillness when it's off the cushion, when it's in your daily life. And that's always the foundation of our training, is to come to that stillness. From there, everything changes. This is where the polishing takes place. The subtlety of dharmic change takes place in that place of non-attachment when you're still. You can do it far more on retreat because we take all, as much as we can, we take all of the distractions away. So that polishing is taking place. these little edges are being challenged, are just being, the sharpness has been taken off of them, so that in time you can begin to let go of little things that you hold on to. And it's so subtle. This is so subtle. This is not, the Dharma is not in your face. This is not an entertainment business where you pay some money and you get a sensory experience for your money. The Dharma doesn't work like that. It's not in the entertainment business. It's a slow, as I say, a very, very subtle, very quiet, if you like, polishing that takes place, that you don't even see. You don't see it. Sometimes something, a bit can fall off and you, oh. But a lot of the time, you don't know. And in time and over the years, you do change. And you may not, you say, well, I'm not the same as I was 5 years ago. But to sort of put your finger on it and sort of look at it is often quite difficult. Some bits you can. But for every bit that you can see, there'll be lots and lots that you don't see. And because it's not an entertainment business and you're not getting your money's worth in your face like you do when you go to the cinema or whatever you do to entertain, because it's not like that, you have to trust it. You have to give it the benefit of the doubt, if you like, and say, well, you know, I just sat a week's retreat and it was really difficult, but something has shifted within that. if you begin to put it in place in a correct way, if you go there and you spend the whole week fighting it and become very willful with it and make it's going to be like this, I want this, it should be like this, I read somewhere that it's like this, and I know that if I meditate long enough, it's going to be like this, and I'm going to damn well experience that, however much willfulness I need to exert to have that experience. Well, if you go down that road, it's not going to work. It won't work. All you'll do is reinforce the self, whether it's obvious or not obvious. It's called an ego trip. And all you do is reinforce the self. And the self is so subtle. It's not a person that's trying to get you. But the nature of that phenomenon, if you like, is that the subtle, never mind the subtleness of the Dharma, the subtleness of the self is also, it's so deceiving that you won't see it. Don't think that you know your ego and you know all about it. You know the roughness, you know the outer edges, as it were. But the subtleness at the heart of this experience of self, you won't pick it. You won't pick it. I don't care how clever you are, I don't care how long you've been doing this. It's almost like it gets driven into a corner. And the more it gets driven in, the more it becomes subtle, so that you can't pick it, see it, find it, identify it. And it's still turning your actions, whatever they may be, it's still becoming a part of the self. It's becoming a part of me. Me and my practice. I'm wise. Even if you don't see it, that's pretty crude. But there's a puffiness that can come. That you don't see, but it's ego. And we got to be so careful about that. You can end up with a far bigger ego after several years of doing this training than when you first started. Make no mistake. Don't think just because you come in and sit on your backside, you're dumping your ego. Don't take that as being that's what's going to happen, because hopefully that's true, but it's not a guarantee. You can end up being more entrenched than when, especially if you turn around and start. There's one thing worse than saying I've got a big ego. It's saying I haven't got a big ego. That's when you want to be careful, because you can bet your life there it is working in a very subtle way, and it's just got you on your blind side. you decide that an ego is like this, but an ego, yes, an ego is like this, but it's also more than that. And you don't see those subtleties. And that goes for people with deep spiritual insight, knowing why people who've not broken through and not been around too long. That little monkey will be ever trying to grasp the experience. But if we get it right, if we are Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha in our life, and hopefully those sorts of extremities can be challenged within a community, that's one of the values of Sangha. But if we get it right, then by all means this part of us that attaches and creates the samsaric world of suffering will lose its power, will diminish. It's like a balloon that slowly deflates, slowly, 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 that you don't actually see the deflation that's going on, but nevertheless it's happening if we get it right. And it's slow, and it immense patience. You still have to live with your stuff, all the things that you love to dump, things you'd like to go beyond are still with you, and you convince yourself that this is not working, but in fact it is working. But it's not working in the way, A, that you think that it works, and B, the way that you want it to work, because it's nothing to do, it's not interested in, the Dharma's not interested in what you want and what you don't want. It doesn't work that way. But by learning to be still, we can begin to identify, we begin to discover that part of us that's not this thing that's the cause of suffering. You begin, and you've never known it in your life. Now you begin to see it, because you're learning to be still, and discover that stillness is the real you. That space that you find on the cushion where there's nothing there, that's very boring, that you wonder, what's next? I need something to stimulate me, to interest me, whatever, which just is highlighting your conditioning, because we're always in that mode of becoming and wanting stimulation. That part there becomes, slowly you begin to see that's who you really are, that's the real you, that's the bit that's liberated, that's already liberated, that's not a part of your madness. What other word can you use? Because we don't learn from our mistakes, like crazy things, hurling ourselves against a brick wall over and over. We do it continually, but there's a part there, and that's the bit that we have to discover, that's not the self. And yet the self, the grasping self, is lurking all the time. We need to be alive and to be awake. But if we get it right, there is this, we need patience. Like nothing in life, we need patience. Not just patience, but to be able to, patient endurance, kishanti, patient endurance, which is not just patience, but you have to bear with. You have to bear with, so you learn to let go of this habit, which becomes emotional. And to be patient with that, and to endure, and to contain and to stay with, so that it goes into change very slowly over time. And that wild self strength reverts back into its true nature, which is your own inner strength, who you really are. Returns to that part of you that is not a part of this self. This is where you get inner strength, so that you can then endure again and again and again, with patience, because you don't get what you want, you don't get the change that you want. Don't give up, keep going. That's there to be. You can trip over at any moment with this training. If you've got this projection, it's going to be like this. I want this. It should be like this. Why am I not changing? Why am I not this? Why? I want. You get into that, you'll fall over. This is where patience comes in, and learn to make friends with all of that and say yes, and embrace all of these features of yourself that you want to dump. Not give in to them, of course, contain them and stay with them and be patient as they play themselves over and pull you this way and pull you that way. But take refuge in that part of you. Discover that part of you. Take refuge there. There's not a part of this madness that's going on. and slowly allow it to play itself out. And as it plays itself out without you reinforcing it, this is the polishing. And in time, things change. We've all got our own karma, our own habits, our own stuff that we're carrying. So we're all different. We're all on a different speed, if you like, if you want to look at it in those terms. But nevertheless, if you stay true to how this training works, things have to change. They take care of themselves. You don't change yourself. You get in there and all you're doing is actually just reinforcing yourself. Even if you manage to change that habit, it will just open up to another one. And the willfulness that's a part of all of that, that's not Dharma at all. You have to learn to identify the difference. Be so careful of the willfulness, the ego that will be with us like a shadow all the way through this. And, you know, retreats give us that opportunity. Our day retreats give us that opportunity. As I was saying, not to the degree of a week, but a day retreat. So that we can refresh ourselves and remind ourselves of what this is about. What are we engaged with? Why are we doing this? You know, what's the purpose of it all? So that we can refresh ourselves and clarify, because we get so crowded in with all of our stuff that, you know, like the blue sky, it just becomes dark with clouds and we don't know whether we're coming or going. And certainly our day retreats are a great value where we can clarify and refresh ourselves and go back into the world of bringing stillness into our life, of not living in the past and not living in the future, which if you observe yourself, be alive and just, you see how so much of your day you're thinking, you're caught up with stuff that's experiences that have gone, and you're projecting into the future, planning, worrying. We seem anything but now. Anything we'll do but now. And then we go looking for comfortable, comforting experience to comfort ourselves. And then create fantasies to comfort ourselves. Just to come here with what's here and realize that actually you are only ever just here. You never for one moment ever leave just here. You never have done and you never will. See that. Try to wake up to that and see how just retreating into these dreams is not going to do it for you. What's going to do it is by learning to be just here. And to be here, to be just here means to be still. When you're still, you're just here. And when you're just here, you're not in your self fantasy world. You're with who you really are. That's the real you. That's a manifestation of your true nature. And you begin to wake up to that part of you that the more you open up to and the more you get to know its reality is the great wonderful mystery of life. but we lock it, we close it all down and lose ourselves in this self-fantasy that has to be anywhere but now. You will never find the self in this present moment. It can't be there. And trust, as I was saying this morning, trust is so, so important for us, because it is, this is for the long haul. This is the marathon, if you like. We just had the Olympic Games. This isn't the 100 metres or the 200 metres. This is the marathon. You see them people go on for hours and hours. I'm not suggesting that we have to have that type of endurance. But this is, and get comfortable with that. And if you want it quick, why do you want it quick? This is our condition. We want everything now. We want gratification. I pay my money, I want it now. You can't do that with this. There are even Buddhists that will play on that. Give me lots of money and on Buddhist or not necessarily Buddhist, give me lots of money and I promise you this and this very quickly. Just don't buy any of that, because that's just rubbish. They might scratch the surface and you go, oh wow, that's fantastic, but that's all you're doing. You're just scraping your veneer, and that's all it is. This is about penetrating to the depths, into the depths, and you ain't going to do that overnight. It doesn't happen. So get comfortable with that. Relax into it. This is about living your life. You're going to live your life. Relax into it and bring the Dharma into your everyday activities, whatever they may be, and just live, and for however long it lasts, and see that the dharmic change is taking place. Things are shifting, things are moving, just through by being patient, by just living with whatever life is presenting you at this moment. And if you can do that, this is the most fantastic thing that you will ever do. We turn the training into a problem, because it's not the way I want it to be, like this, and it's never going to be the way that you want it. Discover how it works and go with it. Give yourself to it. Surrender. Bow your head and go with it. And you do that, so much can just break open for you. But maybe we have to throw ourselves against the wall a few thousand times before we realize that actually it's a pretty stupid thing to do, because it hurts. But we certainly don't realize it straight away, that's for sure. And maybe the more you realize what you're doing to yourself, the more you just wake up to all of this and just give it up and just surrender yourself into that which works, that which will take you to liberation.